You are listening to Faith and Freedom. This broadcast is brought to you by Freedom Ministries at WPMH 670 AM Talk Radio for Hampton Roads, and your host, David Allen Carmichael. Call in at 465-6700. I will choose to listen and believe the
voice of truth. Good day, Hampton Roads. I am David Allen Carmichael. This is the Faith and Freedom Show. Today, I'm going to talk about the issues of the day on a constitutional basis, biblical basis, and the basis of right versus wrong. Somebody changed my statement. Somebody invited me to do another radio show, and they changed it to moral issues, on a moral basis. I say there are absolute rights and there are absolute wrongs. So that's the way I do. I approach things. The issues of the day, we're not going to talk about people unless it's complimentary. We're going to talk about ideas and talk about people's reference. Today, I am excited. One of my heroes, he doesn't even know he's a hero of mine. I haven't even met him yet, but I've seen some courageous work on the part of the person who we've got on the radio today. It is Delegate Robert G. Marshall from Northern Virginia. How are you today, Delegate?
Hi, good to hear from you.
Well, I appreciate you giving me your time. A lot of our listening audience were probably complaining about the ill-famed House Bill 3202 of the 2007 session. And we talked a lot on this radio show about the single object rule and other things that would be the basis of a catastrophe was kind of predicted in that bill. And most people don't know that there's a court case out there with your name on it that nipped the vast majority of the problems with that bill in the bud. So I want to thank you for that hard work. And today I specifically invited you here to talk about your legislation. And Delegate Marshall, I just want to tell you before we begin, I'm going to be giving much of the microphone to you today.
Sure.
My goal is that when we're talking about these issues, that people are actually hearing the mindset of the people putting it together. I even have Sir William Blackstone's writings on my right, and I look over here and there's a statement here about these dangerous innovations. And Blackstone said he wanted people to be at the legislature to avert dangerous innovations and to do those things that supported the Constitution. So what I've seen in the little tracking I've done on your work is that is the kind of work you do, and specifically, you've got a very, I think, an important bill. The first thing we're going to talk about for our listening audience, there's a House Bill 1639, and it's about preborn human rights. Can you tell us about what brought you to the point, what the bill's about, and what brought you to the point to introduce it just the way you did?
Well, the first duty of any government is to protect the lives of its citizens and residents and those persons who, you know, are currently inhabiting the area where they have jurisdiction. And if you can't do that, you either are weak or illegitimate, or you really should, you know, turn the reins over to somebody else. And for the longest time in this country, since the Supreme Court unhinged the rule of law from the protection of humans before birth, we just have been kind of like wandering around. And so what I did, I put this bill in. I reintroduced it. I actually put it in last year, and I got it reported out of the Privileges and Elections Committee by, it was initially one vote, because when the Republicans had no more parliamentary maneuvers with which to duck the responsibility for voting on this, a number of them headed for the door, but I called for the vote and I won by one vote. And so then I got the measure reported out of committee, and then it said it was like 12 to 8. It really wasn't 12 to 7, it was like 8 to 7. But anyway, it was reported out, and again, it just says human life begins at fertilization. Now, this draconian radical idea, we require every third grader in a public school in Virginia to learn. So if you think this is, you know, awkward, then you've got the governor to thank and the members of the assembly to thank, because we say, you know, the simple biological fact that human life begins here. Now, the legal corollary is that human rights should also begin at that point. So that's why I put that in. This is kind of a platform for challenging Roe versus Wade.
And I'm going to actually read it for our listener. This is House Bill 1639, and there's another Senate bill, and we'll be mentioning that number here shortly. It says that life, albeit enacted by the General Assembly of Virginia, that life begins at the moment of fertilization, and the right to enjoyment of life guaranteed by Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution of Virginia is vested in each born and preborn human being from the moment of fertilization. We're going to give you the microphone back here, but I'm going to you have a little preamble here. You actually cited Article 1, Section 1 of the Bill of Rights. So each preborn human being from the moment of fertilization. Folks, this is so desperately important. And he's what the delegate said about our conditioning, what taxpayer-funded dollars we have been, is kind of like the propaganda ministry for the last 40 years. Actually, even prior to Roe versus Wade, there's a little bit of propaganda we've been subject to. But let me read Article 1, Section 1 of the Virginia Constitution, whereas the Constitution of Virginia provides, here it is, it quotes, all men are by nature equally free and independent, have certain inherent rights of which, when they enter into a state of society, they cannot by any compact deprive or divest their posterity. So we can't have legislation that deprives posterity, namely the enjoyment of life and liberty, with the means of acquiring, possessing property, pursuing, and obtaining happiness and safety. And I'm going to give it back to you, Delegate, but one of the things you said it Roe versus Wade unhinged the rule of law. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, law is a rule of reason that is promulgated by competent authority and is designed to secure the common good, okay? When the Supreme Court said there's an entire class of humans, and this stupid observation that Blackmun made that we can't tell when human life begins was frankly fake. I mean, at least since 1830, there had been undisputable understandings in the biological sciences that there is a unique, genetically different human being. And in the 1840s and 50s, the American Medical Association was trying to change statutes in the various states, because the old law you mentioned Blackstone earlier, that was a kind of a evidentiary question. There was proof that a child was there in the mother from quickening, which is the point at which the mother feels the baby, and they had to go on that. I'm not saying their science was necessarily deficient. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but you need proof in a court of law. In any case, prior to that point of quickening, obviously some point of existence has to be there, otherwise quickening wouldn't happen. There is the beginning. And, I mean, if you're a Christian and you understand the dual nature of Christ, true God and true man, he took flesh and became one of us. And that point was at conception. I mean, the conventional term was conception, in the womb of Mary, his mother. So Christ began his full human nature at the point of conception. And the fact that he was in existence is evidence that when Mary walked, I'm using theological arguments or arguments from that, when Mary went to see her cousin Elizabeth, she walked there. You know, there were no Greyhound buses or subways. John the Baptist, who was about 6 months old in his mother's womb, Elizabeth, leapt for joy, what? At the presence of his Lord. Now, a Lord can't be a thing. It's got to be a person. So if you go back in the Bible and look at it, you can understand human life began at conception or fertilization, we now use the term, and should be protected.
Well, one of the things that you've addressed, and I've talked to our audience about this, it's the law of reason in the Virginia statutes, 57-2. It says the law of nature. It refers to those things as the law of nature. So those are the kind of things we have talked about. And what you've just done is for our listening audience, what has to be done to evaluate right and wrong, because one of the things I've said is evil men do not understand justice. So, you know, we can't decide right and wrong. We have to look at things and try to, with our rational mind, figure it out. If we don't get a divine revelation, then there's this rational thought process.
To natural reason, yeah.
So, and I love what you said. And that's the kind of thing I haven't said yet on this radio station. But you just said.
I didn't mean to step on your line.
You did great. And one of the things that I want to go back is I was at Barry Lynn. There's a guy, and I'm trying to think, Americans Separated for Church and for the Separation
American
of Church and
State. Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
Right, United for Separation. It's Barry Lynn. I was at a conference, and he quoted the Old Testament. He said, even the Old Testament said there was a less of a person because, you know, there was less of a penalty. And he quoted the Old Testament, and I thought, and I actually opened the Bible. I had one with me while he was speaking. He said, if men fight and hurt a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished according as a woman's husband imposes on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. He says, see there, the baby wasn't really the full person, and the husband will just make a determination. And I looked down and I kept reading. And it said, but if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life.
For a life, that's correct.
Right, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And then, it was just a few months ago, I was reading Roe versus Wade, just kind of, I wanted to do this topic. And I noticed that the Supreme Court didn't go to the Old Testament. They cited the same thing that Barry Lynn said, and then they actually referenced a commentary on the Old Testament. But they didn't keep reading, and it was the same thing. And then I looked at Blackstone, and I actually bounced the reference to Blackstone, and they said, look, the baby wasn't a, they said it was a no, I'm trying to think the term that Blackstone used, but he said in this one circumstance that they weren't going to treat it as a capital crime if the baby comes out, you know, they find the baby dead, you know, and outside the mother's womb too early or whatever. But when I read it, I kept reading, and it turned out he was talking about preponderance of evidence and the
correct
proof level. And when he kept reading, he said, oh, but if we can see that there's some damage to the baby, it was very clear that somebody deliberately damaged that baby, and that damage would have caused the death, then it's a capital crime. So the Supreme Court twisted it, just completely ignored the rest of the context of what Blackstone wrote about, and it turned out when I looked, they didn't quote Blackstone, they quoted a commentary on Blackstone. And then they also went to the Hippocratic Oath, which pretty much says that, in fact, I looked at some of your legislation last year, and I think you had stuff in there that related very directly to the Hippocratic Oath.
And here was Hippocrates, a Greek physician, 6 centuries before Christ, and he would not do an abortion because of the sanctity of life that this pagan understood without any benefit of revelation.
Well, we're going to be taking a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to be talking to Delegate Bob Marshall. This is important, folks. This is happening on our watch. And you may not believe there's a judgment day, and you might be surprised later, but if you do, guess what? We're accountable. So I really encourage us to take up our civic duty to practice our constitutional Christian love and forbearance. We'll be back.